Victor pulled open the door of the picture-throwing room and came out with handfuls of blown away. The giant Victor was having trouble leaving the screen. The head and one arm had pulled free and were three-dimensional. The arm flailed vaguely at Victor as he methodically threw coils of octocellulose over it. He ran back to the booth and pulled out the stacks of clicks that Bizam, in defiance of common sense, had stored under the bench. Working with the methodical calmness of bowel-twisting terror, he carried the cans by the armload to the screen and heaped them there. The thing managed to wrench another arm free of two-dimensionality and tried to scrabble at them, but whatever was controlling it was having trouble controlling this new shape. It was probably unused to having only two arms, Victor told himself. He threw the last can onto the heap. In our world, you have to obey our rules, he said, and I bet you burn just as well as anything else, eh? The thing struggled to pull a leg free. Victor patted his pockets. He ran back to the booth and scrabbled around madly. Matches. There weren't any matches. He pushed open the doors to the foyer and dashed out into the street where the crowds were milling around in horrified fascination and watching a 50-foot ginger disentangling itself from the wreckage of a building. Victor heard a clicking beside him. Gaffer, the handleman, was intently capturing the scene on film. The chair was shouting at Dibbler.
Of course we can't use magic against it. They need magic. Magic only makes them stronger. You must be able to do something, screamed Dibbler. My dear sir, we didn't start meddling with things best left.
The chair hesitated in mid-snarl.
Unmeddled with.
He finished, lamely.
Matches, Victor shouted. Matches, hurry!
They all stared at him. Then the chair nodded.
Ordinary fire, he said. You're right, that should do it. Good thinking, boy.
He fumbled in a pocket and produced the bundle of matches that chain-smoking wizards always carried.
You can't burn the odium, snapped Dibbler. There's heaps of film in there.
Victor ripped a poster off the wall, wrapped it into a crude torch and lit one end. That's what I'm going to burn, he said.
"Excuse me." "Stupid! Stupid!" shouted Dibbler. "That stuff burns really fast!" "Excuse me."
"So what? I wasn't intending to hang around in there," said Victor.
"I mean, really fast!"
"Excuse me,"
said Gaspode patiently. They looked down at him.
"Me and Laddie could do it," he said. "Four legs are better than two, and so forth, you know, when it comes to saving the day."
Victor looked at Dibbler and raised his eyebrows.
I suppose they might be able to, Dibbler conceded.
Victor nodded. Laddie leaped gracefully, snatched the torch out of his hand, and ran back into the building with Gaspode lurching after him.
Did I hear things, or can that little dog speak? Said Dibbler.
He says he can't, said Victor. Dibbler hesitated. The excitement was unhinging him a little.
Well, he said, I suppose he should know.
The dogs bounded towards the screen. The Victor thing was nearly through, half sprawled among the cans.
"Can I light the fire?" said Gaspode. "It's my job, really."
Laddie barked obediently and dropped the blazing paper. Gaspode snapped it up and advanced cautiously towards the thing.
"Saving the day," he said indistinctly, and dropped the torch on a coil of film.
It flared instantly and burned with a sticky white fire, like slow magnesium.
"Okay," he said. "Now let's get the hell out of..."
The thing screamed. What semblance there still was of Victor left it, and something like an explosion in an aquarium twisted among the flames. A tentacle whipped out and grabbed Gaspode by the leg. He turned and tried to bite it. Laddie ricocheted back down the stricken hall and launched himself at the flailing arm. It recoiled, knocking him over and spinning Gaspode across the floor. The little dog sat up, took a few wobbling steps and fell over.
"Bloody legs been and gone," he muttered.
Laddie gave him a sorrowful look. Flames crackled around the film cans.
"Go on, get out of here, you stupid mutt," said Gaspode. "The whole thing's going to go up in a minute. No, don't pick me up. Put me down. You haven't got time."
The walls of the odium expanded with apparent slowness, every plank and stone maintaining its position relative to all the others, but floating out by itself. Then time caught up with events. Victor threw himself flat on his face. Boom. An orange fireball lifted the roof and billowed up into the foggy sky. Wreckage smashed against the walls of other houses. A red-hot film can scythed over the heads of the recumbent wizards, making a menacing whip-whip-whip-whip noise, and exploded against a distant wall. There was a high, thin keening that stopped abruptly. the ginger thing rocked in the heat. The gust of hot air lifted its huge skirts in billows around its waist, and it stood, flickering and uncertain as debris rained down around it. Then it turned awkwardly and lurched onwards. Victor looked at Ginger, who was staring at the thinning clouds of smoke over the pile of rubble that had been the Odium. "That's wrong," she was muttering. "It doesn't happen like that. It never happens like that. Just when you think it's too late, they come galloping out of the smoke." She turned dull eyes upon him. "Don't they?" she pleaded. "That's in the clicks," said Victor. "This is reality."
"What's the difference?"
The chair grabbed Victor's shoulder and spun him round.
"It's heading for the library," he shouted. "You've got to stop it. If it gets there, the magic'll make it invincible. We'll never beat it. It'll be able to bring others."
"You're wizards," said Ginger. "Why don't you stop it?"
Victor shook his head. "The things like our magic," he said. "If you use it anywhere around them, it only makes them stronger. But I don't see what I can do." His voice trailed off. The crowd was watching him expectantly. They weren't looking at him as if he was their only hope. They were looking at him as if he was their certainty. He heard a small child say,
"What happens now, Mum?"
The fat woman holding it said authoritatively,
"It's easy. He rushes up and stops it just at the last minute. Happens every time. Seen him do it before."
"I've never done it before," said Victor.
"Saw you do it," said the woman smugly, "in Sons of the Desert. When this lady here,"
she gave a brief curtsy in the direction of Ginger, "was on that horse what threw her over the cliff,
and you galloped up and grabbed her at the last minute. Very impressive, I thought."
"That wasn't Sons of the Desert," said an elderly man pedantically, while he filled his pipe. "That was Valley of the Trolls." "It was Sons," said a thin woman behind him. "I should know. I watched it 27 times.
"Yes, it was very good, wasn't it?" said the first woman. "Every time I see that scene where she leaves him and he turns to her and gives her that look, I burst into tears."
"Excuse me, but that wasn't Sons of the Desert," said the man, speaking slowly and deliberately. "You're thinking of the famous plaza scene in Burning Passions."
The fat woman took Ginger's unresisting hand and patted it.
"You've got a good man there," she said. "The way he always rescues you every time. If I was being dragged off by mad trolls, my old man wouldn't say a word except to ask where I wanted my clothes sent."
"My husband wouldn't get out of his chair if I was being et by dragons," said the thin woman.
She gave Ginger a gentle prod.
"But you want to wear more clothes, miss. Next time you're taken off to be rescued, you insist they let you take a warm coat. I never seen you on the screen without thinking to myself, 'She's tempting a dose of flu going round like that.'"
"Where's his sword?"
said the child, kicking its mother on the shin.
"I expect he'll be off to fetch it directly," she said, giving Victor an encouraging smile.
Yes, he said. "Come on, Ginger." He grabbed her hand.
"Give the lad room," shouted the pipe smoker authoritatively.
A space cleared around them. Ginger and Victor saw 1,000 expectant faces watching them.
"They think we're real," moaned Ginger. "No one's doing anything because they think you're a hero, for God's sake. And we can't do anything. This thing is bigger than both of us."
Victor stared down at the damp cobblestones. "I can probably remember some magic," he thought, "but ordinary magic's no good against the dungeon dimensions, and I'm pretty sure real heroes don't hang around in the middle of cheering crowds. They get on with the job. Real heroes are like poor old Gasbode. No one ever notices them until afterwards. That's the reality." He raised his head slowly. "Or is this the reality?" The air crackled. There was another kind of magic. It was snapping wildly in the world now, like a broken film. If only he could grab it. Reality didn't have to be real. Maybe if conditions were right, it just had to be what people believed.
"Stand back," he whispered.
"What are you going to do?" said Ginger.
"Try some holy wood kind of magic."
"There's nothing magic about holy wood."
"I think there is. A different sort. We felt it. Magic's where you find it."
He took a few deep breaths and let his mind unravel slowly. That was the secret. You did it. You just didn't think about it. You just let the instructions come from outside. It was just a job. You just felt the eye of the picture box on you, and it was a different world, a world that was just a flickering silver square. That was the secret, the flicker. Ordinary magic just moved things around. It couldn't create a real thing that would last for more than a second, because that took a lot of power. But holy wood easily created things over and over again, dozens of times a second. It didn't have to last for long, it just had to last for long enough. But you had to work holy wood magic by holy wood's rules. He extended a rock-steady hand towards the dark sky.
Lights!
There was a sheet of lightning that illuminated the whole city.
Picture box!
Gaffer spun the handle furiously.
Action!
No one saw where the horse came from. It was just there, leaping over the heads of the crowd. It was white, with lots of impressive silverwork on the bridle. Victor swung up into the saddle as it cantered past, then made it rear impressively so that it pawed the air. He drew a sword which hadn't been there a moment before. The sword and the horse flickered almost imperceptibly. Victor smiled. Light glinted off a tooth. Ting! A glint, but no sound. They hadn't invented sound yet. Believe it. That was the way. Never stop believing. Fool the eye, fool the brain. Then he galloped between the cheering lines of spectators towards the university and the big scene. The handle man relaxed. Ginger tapped him on the shoulder.
If you stop turning that handle, she said sweetly, I'll break your bloody neck.
But he's nearly out of shot.
Ginger propelled him towards Windlepoon's ancient wheelchair and gave Windle a smile that made little clouds of wax boil out of his ears.
Excuse me, she said in a sultry voice that caused all the wizards to curl their toes up in their pointy shoes. But could we borrow you for a minute?
Way, hey! Draw it mild!
Whum, 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 whum.
Ponder Stibbons knew about the vase, of course. All the students had wandered along to have a look at it. He didn't pay it much attention as he sneaked along the corridor, attempting once again to make a bid for an evening's freedom.
Whum, 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 whum.
All he had to do was cut across through the cloisters and...
Blip!
All 8 pottery elephants shot pellets at once. The risograph exploded, turning the roof into something like a pepper shaker. After a minute or two, Ponder got up, very carefully. His hat was simply a collection of holes held together by thread. A piece had been taken out of one of his ears.
"I only wanted a drink," he said muzzily. "What's wrong with that?"
The librarian crouched on the dome of the library, watching the crowds scurrying through the streets as the monstrous figure lurched nearer. He was slightly surprised to see it followed by some sort of spectral horse, whose hooves made no sound on the cobbles. And that was followed by a 3-wheeled bath chair that took the corner on only 2 of them, sparks streaming away behind it. It was loaded down with wizards, all shouting at the tops of their voices. Occasionally one of them would lose his grip and have to run behind until he could get up enough speed to leap on again. 3 of them hadn't made it. That is, one of them had made it sufficiently to get a grip on the trailing leather cover, and the other 2 had made it just enough to grab the robe of the one in front. So that now, every time it took a bend, a tail of 3 wizards going, "Wah!" snapped wildly across the road behind it. There were also a number of civilians, but if anything, they were shouting louder than the wizards. The librarian had seen many weird things in his time, but that was undoubtedly the 57th strangest. He had a tidy mind. Up here, he could very clearly hear the voices.
Gotta keep it turning. He can only make it work if you keep it turning. It's holy wood magic. He's making it work in the real world.
That was a girl's voice.
All right, but the imps get very fractious if...
That was a man's voice under extreme pressure.
Bugger the imps!
How can he make a horse? That was the dean. The librarian recognized the whine.
That's high-grade magic.
It's not a real horse. It's a moving picture horse. The girl again.
You're slowing down.
I'm not. Look, I'm turning the handle.
He can't ride on a horse that isn't real.
You're a magician and you really believe that?
Wizard, actually.
Well, whatever, this isn't your kind of magic. The librarian nodded and then stopped listening. He had other things to do. The thing was almost level with the Tower of Art and would soon turn to head for the library. Things always homed in on the nearest source of magic. They needed it. The librarian had found a long iron pike in one of the university's mouldering storerooms. He held it carefully in 1 foot while he unfastened the rope he'd tied to the weathercock. It stretched all the way up to the top of the tower. It had taken him all night to fix it up. He surveyed the city below and then pounded his chest and roared. Maybe the pounding wasn't entirely necessary, he thought, while he waited for the buzzing noises and little flashing lights to go away. He gripped the pike in one hand, the rope in the other, and leapt. The most graphic way of describing the librarian's swing across the buildings of Unseen University is to simply transcribe the noises made during the flight. First, This is self-explanatory and refers to the early part of the swing, when everything looked as if it was going well. Then, This was the noise made as he missed the lurching thing by several meters, and was realizing that if you have tied a rope to the top of a very high and extremely solid stone tower, and are now swinging towards it, failing to hit something on the way is an error which you will regret for the rest of your truncated life. The rope completed its swing. There was a noise exactly like a rubber sack full of butter hitting a stone slab, and this was followed after a moment or two by a very quiet oog. The pike clanged away in the darkness. The librarian spread-eagled himself starfish-like against the wall, ramming fingers and toes into every available crevice. He might have been able to climb his way down, but the option never became available because the thing reached out a flickering hand and plucked him off the wall with a noise like a sink plunger clearing a difficult blockage. It held him up to what was currently its face. The crowds flowed into the square in front of Unseen University, with the dibblers to the fore.
"Look at them!"
Cut my own throat sighed.
"There must be thousands of them, and no one's selling them anything!"
The wheelchair slid to a halt in another spray of sparks. Victor was waiting for it, the spectral horse flickering under him. Not one horse, but a succession of horses, not moving, but changing from frame to frame. Lightning flashed again.
"What's he doing?"
said the chair.
"Trying to keep it from getting to the library," said the Dean, peering through the rain that was beginning to thud on the cobbles. "To stay alive in reality, things need magic to hold themselves together. They've got no natural morphogenic field, you see. And do something! Blow it up with magic!" shouted Ginger. "Oh, that poor monkey!"
"We can't use magic. That's like pouring oil on a fire," snapped the Dean. "Besides, I don't know how you go about blowing up a 50-foot woman. It's not the sort of thing I've ever been called upon to do." "It's not a woman. It's a film creature, you idiot. Do you think I'm really that big?" shouted Ginger. "It's using Hollywood. It's a Hollywood monster from Filmland."
"Steer, goddammit, steer."
"I don't know how to."
"You just have to throw your weight about."
The bursar gripped the broomstick nervously. "It's all very well for you to say," he thought. "You're used to it." They'd been stepping out of the great hall when a giant woman had lurched past the gate with a gibbering ape in one hand. Now the bursar was trying to control an antique broom out of the university museum, while a madman behind him feverishly tried to load a crossbow. Airborne, the Arch-Chancellor had said. It was absolutely essential that they were airborne.
"Can't you keep it steady?"
the Arch-Chancellor demanded.
"It's not made for two, Arch-Chancellor. Can't damn well aim with you weaving round the sky like this, man!"
The contagious spirit of Holywood, whipping across the city like a steel hawser with one end suddenly cut free, sliced once again through the Arch-Chancellor's mind.
"We don't leave our people in there," he muttered.
"Apes, Arch-Chancellor," said the bursar automatically. The thing lurched towards Victor. It moved uneasily, fighting against the forces of reality that tugged at it. It flickered as it tried to maintain the shape it had climbed into the world with, so that images of Ginger alternated with glimpses of something that writhed and coiled. It needed magic. It eyed Victor and the sword, and if it was capable of something so sophisticated as knowledge, it knew that it was vulnerable. It turned and bore down on Ginger and the wizards, who burst into flame. The Dean burned with a particularly pretty blue colour.
"Don't worry, young lady," said the chair from the heart of his fire. "It's illusion. It's not real."
"You're telling me," said Ginger. "Get on with it."
The wizards moved forward. Ginger heard footsteps behind her. It was the dibblers.
"Why is it frightened of the flame?" said Sol,
and the thing backed away from the advancing wizards.
"It's just illusion. It must be able to feel there's no heat."
Ginger shook her head. She looked like someone surfing on a curling wave of hysteria, perhaps because it is not every day you see giant images of yourself trampling down a city.
"It's used Holywood magic," she said, "so it can't disobey Holywood rules. It can't feel, it can't hear, it can only see. What it sees is what is real, and what film fears is fire."
Now the giant Ginger was pressed against the tower.
"Well, it's trapped," said Dibbler. "They've got it now."
The thing blinked at the advancing flames. It turned. It reached up with its free hand. It began to climb the tower. Victor slid off his horse and stopped concentrating. It vanished. Despite his panic, he found room for a tiny gloat. If only wizards had gone to the clicks, they'd have known exactly how to do it. It was the critical fusion frequency. Even reality had one. If you could only make something exist for a tiny part of a second, that didn't mean you'd failed. It meant you had to keep on doing it. He scurried crabwise along the base of the tower, staring up at the climbing thing, and tripped over something metallic. It turned out to be the librarian's dropped pike. A little further off, the end of the rope trailed in a puddle. He stared at them for a moment and then used the pike to chop a few feet off the rope to make a crude shoulder strap for the weapon. He grabbed the rope and gave it an experimental tug, and then there was an unpleasant lack of resistance to the pull. He threw himself backwards just before hundreds of feet of sodden rope smacked damply onto the paving. He looked around desperately for another route to the top. The Dibblers watched open-mouthed as the thing climbed. It wasn't moving very fast, and occasionally had to wedge the gibbering librarian into a handy buttress while it found the next handhold, but it was moving up.
"Oh, yes, yes, yes," breathed Sol. "What a picture. Pure kinema. A giant woman carrying a screaming ape up a tall building," sighed Dibbler. "And we're not even having to pay wages."
"Yeah," said Sol.
"Yeah," said Dibbler.
There was a tiny note of uncertainty in his voice. Sol looked wistful.
"Yeah," he repeated. "I know what you mean," said Dibbler slowly. It's really great, but, well, I can't help feeling..." "Yeah, there's something wrong," said Dibbler flatly.
"Not wrong," said Sol desperately.
"Not exactly wrong. Not wrong as such, just missing."
He stopped at a loss for words. He sighed, and Dibbler sighed. Overhead, the thunder rolled. And out of the sky came a broomstick with two screaming wizards on it. Victor pushed open the door at the base of the Tower of Art. It was dark inside, and he could hear water dripping down from the distant roof. The tower was said to be the oldest building in the world. It certainly felt like it. It wasn't used for anything now, and the internal floors had long ago rotted away, so that all that was left inside was the staircase. It was a spiral made of huge slabs set into the wall itself. Some of them were missing. It'd be a dangerous climb, even in daylight. In the dark, not a chance. The door slammed open behind him, and Ginger strode in, dragging the handleman behind her.
"Well," she said, "hurry up. You've got to save that poor monkey."
"Ape," said Victor, absently.
"Whatever."
"It's too dark," Victor muttered.
"It's never too dark in the clicks," Ginger said flatly. "Think about it."
She nudged the handleman, who said very quickly,
"She's right. It's never dark in the clicks. Stands to reason. You've got to have enough light to see the dark by."
Victor glanced up at the gloom, and then back at Ginger. "Listen," he said urgently,
if something goes wrong, tell the wizards about the pit. The things will be trying to break through there, too."
"I'm not going back there."
There was a roll of thunder.
"Get going," shouted Ginger, white-faced. "Lights, picture box, action, and stuff like that."
Victor gritted his teeth and ran for it. There was enough light to give the darkness a shape, and he leapt from stair to stair with the magic of Holywood reciting its litany in his head.
"There has to be enough light," he panted, "to see the darkness."
He staggered onwards.
"And in Holywood, I never run out of strength," he added, hoping his legs would believe him.
That took care of the next turn.
"And in Holywood, I have to be in the nick of time," he shouted.
He leaned against the wall for a moment and fought for breath.
"Always in the nick of time," he muttered.
He started to run upwards again. The slabs passed under his feet like a dream, like squares of movie clicking through the picture box. and he'd arrived in the nick of time. Thousands of people knew he would. If heroes didn't arrive in the nick of time, where was the sense of anything? And there was no slab in front of his falling foot. His other foot was already arching to leave the step. He focused every ounce of energy into one tendon-twanging push, felt his toes hit the edge of the next slab, flung himself forward, and then jumped again because it was that or snap a leg.
This is nuts.
He ran onward, straining to look for more missing slabs.
Always in the nick of time, he muttered.
So maybe he could stop and have a rest. He could still make it in the nick of time. That's what the nick of time meant. Nah, you had to play fair. There was another missing slab ahead. He stared blankly at the space. There was going to be a whole tower of this. He concentrated briefly and jumped onto nothing. The nothing became a slab for the fraction of a second he needed to jump off onto the next one. He grinned in the dark, and a sparkle of light twinkled on a tooth. Nothing created by Holywood magic was real for long, but you could make it real for long enough. Hooray for Holywood!